Good morning and welcome to Mountain Money. This is Larry Warren along with Doug Wells. And Doug, there's smiles on all of our collective faces in Park City, I think, because we had a successful Sundance and now it's over. And
there's a foot to 3 feet of snow coming later this week.
And especially in this sad snow year, we are apparently going to get dumped on. Starting Tuesday night, perhaps, and Wednesday looks like a killer day in terms of powder. So I predict a lot of powder flu hitting the workforce.
Epidemic, yes.
In epidemic proportions on Wednesday and Thursday and Friday. And we'll see how that goes. We're going to talk about not so much Sundance, but the business of making films this morning. We're going to talk with Dan Kogan, who is a producer with Impact Partners. We're going to call him up and talk to him about socially relevant films and how to finance them, produce them, get them out so that people understand what issues are out there.
Yeah, and the socially relevant films really do move the needle. You think about movies like An Inconvenient Truth and then a film that Impact Partners played a role in producing, The Cove, is really a powerful way to move the needle on social issues. So I'm interested to hear what Dan has to say about his work at Impact Partners. It's really, Larry, a show about talking with the stars today. I mean, Dan and Impact Partners are big players. Our second guest is Kathy Shulman. She is an Academy Award-winning film producer, and she's also the president of Mandalay Pictures, which is a huge Hollywood, very successful Hollywood firm.
Indeed.
And we're really going to be talking to Kathy more about her role as president of Women in Film. And Women in Film is the leading nonprofit organization dedicated to women in the global entertainment industry. And we're going to talk about some of the challenges and successes they've had. And then we're going to come back local. A lot of folks in town know Jill Orshel.
Speaking of women in film,
exactly.
Jill is a local Sundance alumnus.
A Sundance alum. I know she's had a film in the festival in the past. She's also a photographer. And as importantly, she's a good friend of KPCW's. And so we're going to enjoy chatting with her. So it's going to be a really interesting show, I think, kind of a wrap up and saying goodbye to Sundance, but getting a better understanding of the business of filmmaking and some of the challenges they're facing. So you're listening to Mountain Money on KPCW, and we'll be back in a moment. Stay tuned.
Park City Realty Group is a proud sponsor of KPCW's Mountain Money. This is Mike Mazzoni, principal broker and owner of Park City Realty Group. 100% locally owned and operated, Park City Realty Group provides boutique real estate services to buyers and sellers in the area. 649-1991 or parkcityrealtygroup.com.
Underwriting on KPCW is supported by Mountain West Bank in Park City, a community bank offering home financing service and guidance. Mountain West Bank is located near Kearns Boulevard next to the movie theater. More information at mountainwestbank.com. Division of Glacier Bank, member FDIC, equal housing lender.
Welcome back to Mountain Money, and we're talking about the business of film and have on the line with us Dan Kogan, now a producer with Impact Partners. And among those partners is Geraldine Dreyfus, who lives locally and has been on our program as recently as last week during the Sundance Reel, talking about the impact of Impact Partners. Welcome to Mountain Money, Dan.
Thanks so much for having me.
Tell us about Impact Partners. You and others, including Geraldine, got together and decided there are great stories out there that need to be told, but yet they're not maybe so commercially. People aren't going to be beating down the doors to finance them, right? So what's your mission at Impact Partners?
Our goal is to take great films that happen to be about social issues, political, economic, cultural, educational, a vast range, and take great films that happen to be about these issues and help finance them so they can make their way out into the marketplace and people can see them.
But these are films that by their nature are difficult to finance and thus I would think don't provide a huge return for the investors. So what are the investors' motivations, and do they get their money back?
Listen, if you want to help finance documentary films about social issues, your goal can't also to make a 20% return at the same time. You know, anyone who tells you that financing these films is going to make you rich is not telling you the truth. However, if you know the marketplace, if you know who the buyers are, if you know what they're willing to pay, if you know how to sell these films, then you can actually help finance them and make your money back. So that you, what we've created at Impact Partners is a self-sustaining fund where you put money into one film, the money comes back through sales, and then investors can roll it into the next film. And we've been successful doing that over the last 8 years.
Dan, I really like that model. I have a couple friends that have invested in films that Impact Partners has introduced them to. And, you know, the average person wants to get involved. It would like to get involved, but they just don't know how to. They don't know how to make good choices. And one of the things I like about what you're doing is for folks that aren't film experts, you kind of bring them, here's some films that deal with social issues that are causes that you care about and are likely to have some success in the industry. And I think that fills a really nice void and helps people that otherwise wouldn't invest in films get involved. Does that kind of summarize one of the big goals for Impact Partners?
That's exactly right. I think the key to it is that there are folks out there who have capital, who want to participate in this world, who want to do it in a thoughtful, smart, conservative way. And they know that they don't know exactly how to do it themselves. You know, they don't know how to choose one filmmaker from another or what projects will have legs in the marketplace or not. Or when you're in the middle of a project, how to help a filmmaker when they're in the time where they can't get over a hump. You know, all these things, it helps to have someone who knows the film world and knows how to solve these problems so the investors aren't required to do things they're not expert in doing.
So it takes someone like you and Geralyn who know the film world, but you're still in the documentary area, largely dealing with fairly unknown directors and writers, aren't you? How do you sort them out?
That's absolutely right. You know, we are Impact Partners exclusively finances documentaries, and about half of our filmmakers are first timers. So there's no question that we're taking risks. But, you know, what I've learned over time is how to look at a project and feel if there's a real film there, and how to have a conversation with a director and feel if he or she understands what it takes to get that film made. And very often those conversations are about whether or not they know what they don't know. I mean, a lot of times if you're working with a first-timer, there's going to be a learning curve. But as long as they know that, then I think you can work with them. I think the tricky directors are the ones who don't know what they don't know. And with those guys, it's much harder to get the right outcome.
So Dan, you just brought up a good point, which is part of the investment is evaluating the people. The other part is evaluating the project. And, you know, the challenge with some of these is they're very difficult topics, right? There's society knows these issues are going on. We oftentimes, to our discredit, like to pretend they don't go on. And you're gonna bring up a subject that we need to be thinking about that needs to be in the social conscious. How do you think about the types of projects that will be successful?
It's a great question, and I think that actually the way that I think about it is this: any film, whether it's a Hollywood blockbuster or a little independent documentary, needs to tell a great story that has a beginning, a middle, and end. It needs to have great characters who an audience can identify with, and it needs to be emotionally moving and dramatically powerful. Those are rules that apply across the entire medium of film. It doesn't matter what kind of film you're making. And so when you look at it that way, that gives you a sense of, okay, is this a film that has those elements or not? And, you know, you can attack a social problem in film from a purely analytical, educational point of view. And I don't think that that's interesting. I also don't think that that will generate an audience. And the truth is, if you don't have an audience, you're not going to change anything. So a film has to be emotionally engaging and entertaining. And if you can do that while also making the film about a social issue, then then you really have something. And I think that it's easier to do than you think, because very often, if it's an important social issue, there will be controversy associated with, there will be conflict around it, there will be differing opinions, and that itself helps create drama that makes the film interesting to watch.
Okay, what films did you bring to Sundance this year? You had quite a few in your quiver, didn't you?
We did. We had four films at Sundance this year. We had Alive Inside, which won the Audience Award. We had E-Team, which won the Cinematography Award. We had The Overnighters, which won a special jury prize. And we had a film called Web Junkie, which was about internet addiction in China.
So that sounds like quite a hit list and quite a success record. And I know we mentioned The Cove at the opening, and that won the Academy Award for Best Documentary. I think it was 2009, 2010. So you just listed four or five successful films here in Sundance. How many have you backed in the last 12 months?
We do around 10 to 12 films a year. The way that we do it is probably 500 or 600 projects a year, and we present only about a dozen of those to our investors. So as you can tell, there's a huge winnowing process, and it's one place where we generate value, is that, you know, you need to know what's going on out there, and then within that big group, you need to know what to really pay attention to, and that's a much smaller group. And, you know, so we see 500-600 projects a year. We probably dig in and really look closely at about 50 to 75 of them, and end up presenting around a dozen to our investors.
And then do you finance 100% of these, or do you find other partners, and what can a film director expect from Impact Partners in terms of financial support?
Usually we don't finance them completely. A lot of that has to do with the fact that a lot of filmmakers don't come to us at the beginning of the process. They come to us later. So we'll see when they've already been shooting, or we'll see a first cut of the movie. And also, we can only provide as much financing as that we think we can get out of it, because our goal, remember, is to get our money back to roll that into the next film. So if a filmmaker comes to us looking for, you know, $500,000, and we feel like at the end of the day we can only generate revenue of, you know, $350,000, and they've got to find another $150,000, and very often that comes out of, you know, doing things more cheaply, or sometimes the filmmakers themselves will do deferments and they won't take a fee. I mean, this is not a business that you do to get rich. This is a business that you do because you really believe in it and want to be in this world. You know, sometimes we're able to help them by going and selling the television rights before the was done. We try anything we can do if there's a gap between what we feel we can put up and what a film needs to fill that gap, because at the end of the day, we're here to help get the film made.
So Dan, you're dealing with groups of investors, and in some ways you're a conduit between interesting projects that talk about important social issues and folks that would like to get involved but don't have the skill set to make the selection properly. So when you think of the type of investors you like to work with, do the investors have to be multimillionaires and billionaires, or what is the typical investment size of the families that choose to support Impact Partners? And then how do you explain to them on the return? Should they expect to be able to get their money back? You said, you know, don't plan on a 20% per year return, but is a return of their capital a realistic goal?
I think it is a realistic goal, although you got to average that out over time. So some films will work well and make money. Some films will lose money. I think over time we've been able to break even for folks, but that's an average over a wide range of films of many years. I think the way to think about it is this. You know, nobody enters the independent film business as an individual in order to make money. If that's what you think that you're doing, then you're in the wrong business. So if you have, on the other hand, a high capacity for risk, you're willing to take some chances, you know you may lose some and you may win some, but most importantly, you want to be involved in this world, then I think you have the right set of expectations to enter into it. I think in the documentary side, we tend to know what films sell for and what's possible, because it's a very stable marketplace, and so that's why we're able to do what we do. On the fiction side, it's much more feast or famine. And unfortunately, there's a lot more famine than feast. But you have to have a high capacity for risk. There's no doubt about it.
And what type of investors do you – what's a typical investment size of family that wants to participate?
You know, we've invested as little as $25,000 in a film and as much as $500,000. And those investments get split among however many investors want to be part of an investment. So we have 33 members as part of Impact Partners. Sometimes two of them are involved in any given film, and sometimes, you know, as many as 25 of them. So there's really a huge range. I think the way that you have to think of it is this is money that you have to be willing to put at risk. Over time with us, we've been able to return it, but I think that won't be the case in a lot of situations. And for other investors working outside of Impact Partners, and I think you got to be cognizant of that, and I think you got to have other reasons for doing it.
Now, Dan, of the four films you brought that were award winners this year, we interviewed the directors of all four of those films, and they all told great stories about the making of their films. But the one I saw of those four was The Overnighters, about the oil boom in North Dakota and the lives of the men, often desperate men, who excuse me, who come to boom towns and hope to score a high-paying job and then don't, and then they're in even more desperate straits. It was an interesting film, an interesting slice of life, but where will that film live on after Sundance?
You know, I think that's an incredible film, and we already have multiple offers on it for U.S. distribution, and I think it will take the next week or two to see where we land. But that's a film that people will see, ideally in movie theaters, but without a doubt in television, and millions of people will have the opportunity to see it.
It really is a golden age for that director. Just went as a one-man band, I believe, at least in the beginning, with a not a huge camera, but was able to tell a great story. It really is, isn't it, a kind of a golden age for documentarians? There are so many cable channels out there and internet channels now where this work can get out and be seen.
I would definitely say that it is a golden age. You're talking about a moment when it costs very little money between buying a camera and buying an editing system. Those used to be costs in the hundreds of thousands of dollars just years ago. And now we're talking about you can buy a camera and an editing system for, you know, $5,000 total and make a real documentary film.
In fact,
that has lowered the barriers to entry immensely.
In fact, I was at a Sundance film, not this year, but last year, and during the Q&A, the director said he had to go back and reshoot a piece, and he didn't have the expensive equipment, and he actually used his iPhone to reshoot this one small segment of it. And he said it worked out just fine, which is just amazing. So it's an industry in disruption really on two ends, right? The cost to produce it has come down because the digital equipment has reduced in price so dramatically. But also the distribution channel, which is something that's really interesting for me as an outsider to watch play out. I mean, I would imagine the likes of Netflix and possibly even Amazon getting into the field and online streaming is really changing things. And I was curious your thoughts on that.
You know, this is a subject that we could spend hours talking about. It's incredibly interesting and complicated, and it's changing every day. I think the bottom line of it is that people, when they see documentaries, still tend to see them on television, whether that's PBS or HBO or these days CNN, Showtime. This is where people tend to see documentaries, and you get millions and millions of viewers. At the same time, there is no question that digital distribution offers people the ability to get things online and have them be seen by an audience. Netflix is obviously at the crop there. The tricky thing about digital distribution is that while now everyone can put their film online, how do you get people to pay attention to it? You know, if you sell a film to HBO or to PBS, they will market that film and they have an audience and the audience will go see it. But if you're just putting a film up for sale on Amazon, how do you get people to pay attention? That's the trick within the new world of digital distribution is, yes, you can put anything out there yourself, but you've got to find a way to market it.
Yeah, it's the classic, there's 10,000 channels on our television now, and what are we going to watch tonight, right?
Exactly.
So, you know, one of the things that makes Sundance such a unique experience, at least for me, is, you know, I love watching the documentaries. I probably watch more documentaries over the two-week period that Sundance is here than, and this probably isn't unusual, than I do the rest of the year.
Well, and I guess because I deal in a fact-based world, that's what I glom onto when I'm shopping for Sundance tickets, looking for the documentaries.
And the piece that makes Sundance interesting that I do think we could get on our televisions and online streaming as well is really the Q&A afterwards. Is there anything that would prohibit, like, tacking on the Q&A from Sundance at the end of the film? So people watching it at home could get more of that Sundance experience and get the insights from some of the better questions that were asked at Sundance and hear the answers from the directors.
I think that's a great idea. I'd love to see them, you know, provide the Q&As to folks to watch them if they're interested.
That could be a DVD extra.
There you
go.
Like you see.
You got it.
In the films. Okay, so are you all? Do you have a cycle, or are you always looking at these 600 some pitches you get?
You know, we are always looking, and you never know where something great is going to come from, and you got to keep an open mind. And you know, Geralyn and I recently helped start with some other folks from an organization called Chicken and Egg Pictures. We helped start a new fund for women filmmakers of fiction. It's called Game Changer. And so now we're not only looking at 600 docs a year, but we're looking at hundreds and hundreds of scripts. But so the well just keeps getting deeper. But we sold our first film from Game Changer at Sundance this year. It was a fantastic film called Lanto. And that's another example of a film that was able to be made very inexpensively, and we did a great sale on it. And maybe that's something, you know, to talk about with Kathy Shulman next, is that issue of women directors and how we can get more women working.
Yeah, no, it's a big issue. You know, one of the benefits of living here in Park City, and I've got two young children that get to benefit from being here as well, and they see Sundance come and they get excited. For the younger folks in our audience that maybe do want to get involved in the film industry, Dan, I wanted to give you a chance before we let you go. Tell us your story. How did you get into the role that you're in today?
You know, I avoided it as long as I possibly could. I did a lot of other things. I was a journalist. I worked in politics. I was a speechwriter. And the truth is I loved movies and wanted to make them. And so after doing lots of other things, I finally went to film school. And then, of course, got there and learned that film school is one thing, but making films is another. Spent a couple of years there, dropped out, and just started making movies. And the truth is that the only way to really, there is no path in the entertainment business. It's not like being a lawyer. It's not like being a doctor. The only path is just to do it. So whatever way that you can do it, you just have to go about doing it. And luckily, it's never been easier or less expensive to do that.
Well, Dan, we can congratulate you on your slate of films that all won awards at Sundance, Alive Inside, The E-Team, The Overnighters, and Web Junkie. All of them made quite the splash here. And you and Geralyn and others have a good eye. Appreciate you joining us this morning for Mountain Money.
Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you, Dan.
Bye-bye.
And we will continue the conversation with Women in Film, Kathy Shulman, president of that organization, also president of Mandalay Pictures. She is on deck, and we will join her after this.
Hi, I'm Kelly from San Francisco Design, longtime supporter of KPCW. We provide a mix of European and mountain contemporary home furnishings for a unique Park City lifestyle. Our showrooms are in Park City and Salt Lake, and both offer complete design services. We're on the web at sanfrandesign.com.
Hi, this is Steve Roney with Prudential Utah Real Estate, a proud supporter of KPCW. With more than 100 sales associates and 14 gallery or ski-in offices in Park City, Prudential Utah can help you with your residential or commercial real estate needs. More information at pru-utah.com or with the Prudential Utah mobile search app.
Just because it's white outside doesn't mean you can't stay green. Listen to This Green Earth every Tuesday at 9 a.m.
Discussing environmental issues from methane gas to moose habitat,
air quality to fire ecology,
and bark beetles to eating bugs.
That's This Green Earth, brought to you by Jones, Waldo, Holbrook, and McDonough,
Republic Services,
Habitat for Humanities Restore,
and Rocky Mountain Power.
Welcome back to Mountain Money, and we're in the process of getting Kathy Shulman on the line. She is president of Women in Film, and we're reaching her on the West Coast. And, Doug, it's just interesting how some movies, the expectation is not low, but I remember going to a Sundance screening of Super Size Me with Morgan Spurlock years ago.
Huge commercial success.
And he said in the Q&A, and that's why Sundance is so fun, you get to meet these people and ask them questions.
Right.
And Morgan said he was just between two projects. He had 2 months to kill in between projects and thought, well, what could I do to fill my time?
And ends up making a blockbuster.
And he got this idea, I'll just eat McDonald's food, and every time they say, do you want to supersize it, I'll say yes.
Right.
And that became Super Size Me, and I think he sold it at Sundance for $4 million.
Nice.
And that was
went on to gross probably hundreds of millions.
And that
of
was just this project he did on a whim. And so you never know what's going to happen with a Sundance film. You come in with something you made yourself with a small video camera, and the next thing you know, you're a superstar.
And sometimes these films have unintended consequences, because after seeing that, my kids were like, can we eat at McDonald's for the next 30 days? So be careful with these documentaries.
I think they didn't get the point of the movie.
Right. Well, they were young. But I understand we have Kathy on the phone now. Kathy Shulman is the president of Women in Film, which is the leading nonprofit organization dedicated to women in the global entertainment industry. She's also president of Mandalay Pictures. Kathy, we're glad to have you on the show. Thank you for joining us.
It's nice to be here. Thank you.
So, Kathy, I gave just a brief summary of Women in Film, but I wanted to give you a chance to open first with kind of the vision of Women in Film and what your objectives and goals are.
Yeah, Women in Film is in its 41st year, and it's an organization that is dedicated to supporting women in media. It originally began as Women in Film only, but now it's been expanded to film, television, media, and the digital arts. And the organization's primary goal, quite frankly, is to equal the playing field, to create gender equality in terms of career opportunities and career sustainability. And to do so, we have all sorts of programs that is designed to reach this goal.
So why do women, after 41 years, still need an organization like Women in Film?
Well, that's a good question. Oftentimes people ask me what my biggest goal is for Women in Film. I say to blow up the building. And that will happen when we're done fighting for equality. It is a great mystery that in such a progressive art form and in such a kind of in such a creative area that we still suffer the way that we do in terms of employability. And one of the interesting things is that we've discovered that the less money involved in a particular film transaction, the more equality we have. And as the amount of money involved in the picture and the amount of risk involved in the picture increases, the least it goes the opposite way. Then there's the least amount of opportunity for women. And we did a major study last year that was a partnership between Women in Film and the Sundance Film Festival, which is an ongoing partnership called the Women in Film and Sundance Institute Initiative, and last year's study's main finding was that the preventative obstacle for women in film is lack of access to financing, and that financing is a primarily male-controlled network.
So, Kathy,
and so the main problem in answer to your question is we can't seem to get money.
So, Kathy, we had Jackie Zahner in, who I believe you know.
Very well.
Probably about a month ago, maybe 6 weeks ago, Larry, really talking about the business side and the challenges that women face in business. And one of the takeaways I learned from that conversation is parity is great, but boy, if we could just get it to 25 or 30% women around the executive table on the business side, then that kind of that opens the door and makes the final step, 250%, a lot easier. Do you think it's a similar challenge in the film industry?
Well, I suppose that every percentile that grows is a good step in the right direction, but I just ultimately feel that this about film. I mean, film and television, any of the media arts, we are creating the record of what we did, what we felt, how we observed while we were here on this planet. And this planet is made of 50% men and 50% women, give or take, on a given day. And I just feel that until we have equality at the table, as Jackie said, equality at the decision-making table and in the gatekeeper jobs in film, writers, producers, directors, it's hard to imagine that we could be creating a record that had anything to do with the reality of the life that we live or the place where we live or the observations of our whole, not to be grandiose, but the whole humankind. And so, yes, every bit is a step in the right direction, but it shouldn't be so outrageous to imagine just being equal.
And in fact, I think of the film industry as being one that has more equality than most businesses, and I would actually, my belief going into this interview was completely wrong. Your organization sent out a press release on January 20th that talks about, you know, this year's festival as well as the progress over the years, and a couple of the bullet points here, I guess, in the U.S. dramatic category, women directors did represent 50%, which is the good news. But the bad news is, as your organization looks at it over the last 12 years, I'm looking for the exact quote here, your study revealed no meaningful change over time, which as a father of two young daughters is really frustrating to hear. Why do you think it's been so difficult to get lasting and real change?
Well, let me first say that I think that at the level of schools and then festivals, I do think that over time we're seeing changes that although they don't amount numerically yet, will begin to. We are seeing many schools with, you know, 50-50 enrollment for men and for women in the media arts. And then we're starting to crawl up as they begin to make their first films. And the way that we've been able to record first films is by looking at the various festivals, you know, around the country. And we see that there's some opportunity and it's breaking. But like I said before, as soon as women graduate from this, and I say this in a complimentary way, this rather parochial kind of supportive environment, we seem to have this absolute drop-off, as Stacey Smith, who is the author of that study, said. She calls the fiscal cliff, that as soon as we get into transacting with institutional money, it falls apart. So I hate to repeat myself in answering that, you know, the reason why this is happening is because women are having a hard time being put in charge of the money. But that is the primary answer at the moment. I can break it down further and would be happy to. But I do want to mention one very positive thing that this year's study did, in fact, enlighten, which is that we were able to analyze the films that go through the Sundance Labs, which is the, you know, support system at Sundance. It's essentially the nurturing, incubating system for young filmmakers. And what we discovered is that even though attendance or acceptance into those labs is not 50-50, it's more like 30-70, that every person, that what is equal is that once those films are nurtured, the completion rate to finish those films, and the ability for those films to be accepted by major film festivals shows exact equality. So one thing we did notice is that women who are nurtured by professionals to reach their highest potential do so at the exact same rate as men. And why that's important is that we also, besides looking at what prevents us from getting the money, we have to look at what we need to do to be better trained to get the money. And that's one of the things that Women in Film is very focused on right now, training women to access capital.
Yeah, that's, of course, key. And what else does an aspiring filmmaker get from Women in Film if they associate with you or you associate with them?
Well, it starts at the beginning. I mean, obviously, we have a major focus on finding women who are interested in this particular area, and we have a massive outreach to colleges, and we have all sorts of entry-level programs that help people understand the business and their art form. They can participate through our PSA programs, which are public service announcements that we actually produce in-house for the community. They get to learn how to, you know, do whatever they're doing in terms of the technical aspects of filmmaking. We give grants to help support their films. We give finishing funds for people who get started on a film but can't finish. We have probably 10 feature production programs and about 10 television programs. Some of them that are interesting include trailing directors and writers working on TV shows, working on in production for mentors. We have a very large and probably most importantly a mentorship program where more professional women and men in the business reach out and work for years, you know, with our mentees. So overall, it's good for networking. It's good for training, it's good for education, and it's sort of live opportunities.
So Kathy, we've only got time for one last question. I want to end on a similar question of what we asked Dan, which was, you know, kind of his advice for young people that maybe want to get into the industry. And I want to preface it with a quick story. You know, living here in Park City and having Sundance in our backyard is such a blessing, really. My 10-year-old went to see a movie. Robert Rodriguez was the director. Kids know him as the director of Spy Kids. She asked a question during Q&A. He asked her to come up afterwards, inspired her a year ago to just start making films on her iTouch. And my daughter now has 1,000 followers on YouTube making little stop-motion pictures with her American Girl dolls. So, and that was a pivotal moment for my daughter. What advice do you have for young people that like the entertainment industry and would like to do that professionally?
Well, first of all, that's a wonderful story about your daughter, and I agree with Robert that start doing it. It's really something that can be done in any format, and the best way to learn is to start doing it, because what you're doing is creating your life as a storyteller and your life as a vision keeper. And that's the most important thing, to have clarity about your vision and to know what it is that you're trying to say. So I would recommend similarly, and add one thing for the older entry, for the person that's looking at it in terms of a career path, and that was just to say that remember that there's a reason why it's called show business. There's the show side, which is the making of the film, and the business side, which is how to get people in the seats. And it's really important to develop your knowledge about both sides. And I think that these days, particularly, those people who focus on understanding how the business works, but also how to protect their and nurture their own vision, are the people who are the most successful.
Well, Kathy, we thank you for joining us, and we thank you for that advice for the folks in the industry interested in getting into this business. Our guest this morning is Kathy Schulman. She's the president of Women in Film and the president of Mandalay Studios. Thank you for joining us, Kathy.
Thanks so much for having me.
And we'll be back with local filmmaker Jill Orschel after this.
This is Craig McCarthy with the Park City Chamber Bureau. Do you know that members of the Park City Chamber Bureau have access to a wide array of benefits that give them an edge in the local marketplace? We offer members-only insurance and discount programs, business-to-business networking opportunities, and much more. Becoming a member of the Park City Chamber Bureau is a great investment for your business. Information on joining is online at visitparkcity.com or call us at 649-6100. The Park City Chamber Bureau is a nonprofit organization.
Juniper Landing is proud to support our local radio station, KPCW. Juniper Landing is a new, whole-ownership townhome community located at the base of Canyons Resort, adjacent to the Waldorf Astoria Park City, with a model open daily. Our website is juniperlandingparkcity.com.
Welcome back to Mountain Money. We have with us now Jill Orschel in the studio with us. Jill, an old friend of KPCW, and she was here last week as one of the co-hosts on the Sundance Reel, Woman About Town, and in the film business herself as an award-winning filmmaker. And I think the most interesting thing about your biography is that you're from Aspen, but you live in Park City. That's a good vote for Park City right
we
there.
We have a couple of those residents. I have some friends that have done that as well.
So let's talk about making films based in Park City, Utah. What have you found over the years as you've had ideas in terms of launching them out of here?
Yeah, well, good morning, Larry and Doug. Being from small mountain towns like Aspen and Park City has been a great thing for me because I can raise my family here and have a kind of a nice, rural, beautiful life.
Indeed.
And also it's been problematic because you're a little isolated here from the film community. Of course, now we've got computers, and that makes things a lot easier to network. I think right now we are living in the most exciting time to be an independent filmmaker, and as you guys were talking about earlier, it's a golden age of documentary filmmaking right now because things are changing and it's exciting. The form is evolving, and you can really – I'm still in the process of kind of finding my artistic voice, I would say.
But it's easier to find that voice because you're not putting hundreds of thousands of dollars at risk.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly. I really do feel comfortable now just going out with my camera. I do have like about a $5,000 package where it's a camera, a tripod, a nice mic, and then an editing system. Still,
but that probably would have cost you 10 times that 10 years ago, don't you
think? Definitely. Yep. So now I've got a nice workflow going. One thing is I was watching, every year going to Sundance and watching these great films. You look at the credits and you don't just see one person there. You know, you see a whole.
It's mind-boggling how many people are in the credits. Why does it take so many people to produce a film?
It does. It takes an army. I mean, we can start off, which I'm doing right now, filming a film subject, just like Jesse Moss did with The Overnighters that you were talking about earlier. Great film. He goes there by himself, sleeps on the floor, films, and is open to the story. I'm doing that right now with a film subject. But there comes a point where you need to get resources and you need to start building a team.
You can gather the raw material, but shaping it.
Exactly.
Is the key.
Oh, well, I can spend another couple years editing it, but I prefer to have a good editor that knows how to shape a story, that's willing to work with my vision, and I would pay after I get grants, and then we would possibly get an animator because the person I'm working with is the film subject is an artist. I'd love to do animation. We need to get other people on board, a social media, what they call it now is a producer of marketing and distribution, mm-hmm. where you start getting audience engagement early on and, into your screenings. And
so actually shooting the footage doesn't take the army. It's really the post-production?
Exactly, post-production.
Where things come in. So one of your films is The Places You'll Go.
Yeah.
Right? So how many people did it take to actually get the footage, and then how many people did it take after that until it actually made it to the screens?
Yeah. That was my first film in film school. It was on 16-millimeter film, and I had the support of the University of Utah Film Program. So I had a mentor to work with to help me shape the film, my professor. I had schoolmates, classmates who could help with sound, who could help with, wrangling our locations and props and that type of thing. So now, as a out of school, I don't have that resource. I need to either ask, beg, borrow, and steal those
right.
nice people,
right?
Or
but they probably
hire them.
Need projects at the school. I want to get to the University of Utah's program, if you don't mind, just
yeah.
for a moment. So I think a lot of folks think if you want to get into films, you need to move to Hollywood. And if you're a Park City local, you love living here. Do you have to move to Hollywood, or can you get the skills that you need here locally?
I believe you do not need to go to Hollywood or New York City. And a lot of people feel that they need to because all the action is right there, you know, personally. But I really am a believer in the regional filmmaking and, you know, the personal stories that have from, you know, different parts of the United States and, you know, here in Utah in particular and mountain towns. I think you can get there's a lot of great people through the Utah, the University of Utah, but also the Utah Film Commission. There's a lot of great craftspeople. And
I know for some of the bigger films, the state mm-hmm. of Utah actually has some economic dollars to incentivize the studios to come here.
Yep.
What about for the smaller filmmaker? Are there any government state dollars to help you with that?
Well, on a very small level, there's a great little incentive that independent filmmakers can purchase equipment without paying tax. So that's a nice little thing. But as far as, you know, like government grants on the state or local level, you know, there's $500 here from the, you know, Utah Humanities Council, another $1,000 there for,
it's fairly limited.
My experience producing documentaries at another time in my life.
Well, we should mention the Silver to Snow documentary. That was your baby, right?
Available at the Park City Museum.
There we go.
Yeah.
But I found the frustrating thing for me was spending more time raising money than working on a film.
Oh, exactly. You know, I remember sitting on a panel a couple years ago when Steven Soderbergh was here. And he said, for all filmmaking, independent filmmaking, not just documentaries, but you spend 99% of your time trying to make the deals, figure it out. With a documentary filmmaker, it's like finding a subject and a story. And then 1% of the time is actually doing the craft.
Yeah, and so frustrating. Is that changing at all now with crowdfunding sources, going to the internet, going to groups like Women in Film and Impact Partners.
Or Kickstarter.
Yeah, exactly. You know, crowdfunding is really, really exciting. And it's all the resources available. It's never been a better time. The key, though, right now, what's harder is there's a lot more work and a lot more commitment that you need to put to it. It's a full-time job. And the whole key is finding the right fit. So with crowdfunding, you reach out and you start building a community around your project. You start targeting your audience, and your audience starts finding you. And there's a dialogue, and a momentum is growing around the project. You feel like people are part of your team, and you're all in this together. That's the real exciting part. You just need to make sure it's the right fit with the project.
In fact, what people don't realize is this whole crowdfunding endeavor and development over the years really came out of the entertainment industry, like Kickstarter. I'll have friends that like to back projects on Kickstarter, which are just gadgets that you can buy. And they'll tell me, oh, there's all these projects for movies and music. And, you know, they're telling me, I don't care about these things. I just want the gadget. But what they don't realize is that's how Kickstarter got started, was to help bands kind of fund doing an album or what you're talking about, films. So, Kickstarter.com, which is different than the Kickstart venture capital firm. We had Gavin Christensen in. Those are two very different things. But Kickstarter.com is where budding filmmakers can go to get some support for financial support for their films. And people that want to be involved can go, and you don't have to be a multimillionaire. You don't have to be a billionaire. You can pledge $100 to help an artist get their project out.
Exactly. You know, it's all about sharing your story to the, you know, Kickstarter world, or you know, through Kickstarter, or Indiegogo is another great one that's pretty popular. But it's like sharing your story and letting people in to be a part of that story. And they may donate $10, and then you offer a little something for them. And it's usually, you know, just really dynamic. It's a pretty cool thing.
Very fine. We are about out of time. Just to talk a little bit about locally, are there many other filmmakers like you working out of the house, balancing kids' life, skiing, mountain biking, everything else? Is there a little community here?
Yeah, you know, we do the, through the Park City Film Series, we do a local filmmaker showcase each year, and it grows every year. And I think there are a lot of people that are, you know, in the working with small computers and small cameras. And I think the whole key is all of us, part of the filmmaker showcase is we try to get everybody as a community so we can all kind of support each other. I think that's so important. It's coming out a little bit more and supporting each other. I just wanted to say, I don't know if we have any time, but like in the woman in film, when you guys are talking to Kathy Shulman, I think, boy, there's always that argument of the women having a hard time, you know, making it and it being equal. And each and every day I struggle with the obstacle that I come across is I keep giving. I keep nurturing, you know, my kids, my husband, my friends, do free pictures here. I make, you know, go into the schools there. You know, it's like that. We need to, as women filmmakers, need to start nurturing our projects and nurturing ourselves. That is going to be the number one thing that gets us to be more equal.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's good advice, and we've been asking people for further advice, and so that's a good note for us to end on, kind of your advice to the women filmmaker here locally is, hey, it's great that you're nurturing and doing these other projects, but make sure you take time for your project as well. Take time for yourself, which I think is an issue for women nationwide, no matter what industry they're in. Our guest this morning, Jill Orshel. She's a local filmmaker and Sundance alum. Jill, thanks for joining us this morning.
Thanks for having me.
We'll be back after this.
Additional funding for programming on KPCW has been provided by Longreimer Weiniger Bepler, Estate Planning, Family Law, lrw-law.com. Brett Stimson, Mortgage Assistant for Home Purchases, 801-201-3484. The Corporation for Public Broadcasting and listeners like you.
Welcome back to Mountain Money as we wrap our all film, all Sundance week and a half here at KPCW. I want to thank our great sponsors for Mountain Money, the Park City Realty Group, Mountain West Bank, the Iron Mountain Group, the Park City Chamber, Prudential Real Estate, and San Francisco Design. And Doug, we just have a minute or two left.
Yeah, and Larry, I think some really good news came out over the weekend, which is the unemployment rate here in Utah has improved dramatically over the last 12 months. It's improved by 1.8%, and here the unemployment rate in Utah is 4.1% now, which is really good. Nationwide, it's 6.7%, so kudos to the state of Utah. That's a really healthy number.
A 2% better return than other.
I don't think I've seen a report
than the
this,
nation.
This optimistic
that is
a
big gap, and it shows that boom times are kind of back here. We created in December, of course, December had a lot of Christmas hiring, but added 22,500 jobs to the Utah economy, and that's stunning.
Now, which is the good news. The bad news is there's still 60,000 Utahns that want jobs that don't have jobs.
Indeed, and we will hope that the trend continues because that has been the trend. Utah has always been about 2 points better than the nation as a whole. So let's hope that continues. Now, a trend on the other side is that the stock market has been dropping not precipitously, but quite a bit. And we just have 30 seconds for your expert analysis.
Friday was a 2% pullback. And my overall analysis is, you know, I think a pullback at this point is healthy. We want to keep an eye on things. People are concerned about emerging markets. But if you look at the companies that reported last week, and that have pre-reported in this earnings season. So far, U.S. companies are doing really, really well.
That's the good news. Excellent. Here's the other good news, Doug.
Snow.
we're going to have a high of 39 today under mostly sunny skies, becoming cloudier then all through the week. By Tuesday night, hopefully, snow will start falling, and snow is likely, they're calling it a 70% chance on Wednesday, and they're talking feet. So perhaps we've broken the cycle. That's Mountain Money for this morning. Thanks for joining us. This is KPCW Park City.